Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Xfinity Mobile, featuring customized wireless plans. Customers can choose unlimited, buy the gig, shared data, or a mix of both and switch it up anytime. Learn more at xfinitymobile.com.
Welcome to Health Dialogues. I'm Sarah Varney, sitting in for Scott Schaefer. HIV/AIDS remains a global and domestic epidemic. There are some 1.1 million Americans infected with the virus that causes AIDS, and another 50,000 people become newly infected each year. Even so, a stable of potent drugs has blunted the deadliness of HIV, at least for people who can get regular treatment. And 30 years after the epidemic began, HIV for many is a manageable chronic disease. So what's it like living with HIV today? For those who've just been diagnosed, and for those approaching old age. During the hour ahead, we're going to hear from people with HIV and those caring for people with HIV and scientists in the laboratory studying the virus. First, let's hear from two gay men who are HIV positive. They both live in the San Francisco Bay Area. Randy Allgaier is in his 50s. He's been infected for 25 years. Jason Villalobos is 31 years old. Here's Randy.
I am doing more than most people, and I've beaten the odds. Thank you to the pharmaceutical industry for that. That has a lot to do with it. It's given me 22 years with my partner that I wouldn't have had. My partner is an amazing man who puts up with this crazy A-type person who does too much and calls me on it. We've just developed this synchronicity that I think is the most important part of what's kept me healthy. Plus good medical providers. I have an HIV doctor in San Francisco, Dr. Virginia Cafaro, who is one of the best HIV doctors in the city and has been by my side through this journey. If I live to 65, I will be very, very happy. If I live longer, even better. I certainly didn't expect to be living into my 50s, let alone my 60s. My hope is to continue working as long as I can. And my hopes are just to continue living my life with as much quiet integrity as possible.
I'm very, obviously hyper aware of my disease. I have a very good weight. I don't look sick. People tell me they would never know that, you know, I had HIV. But the reason why they would never know is because I pay attention to my health. I take my pills. I take 3 pills every morning when I wake up. I really stay on top of my health. I'm now an avid cyclist. I'll get on my bike and I can, you know, as just a regular light ride, I knock out, you know, 20 to 30 miles on my bike. And that's, you know, I will say that is an amazing leap from, you know, getting winded walking up my stairs and, you know, throwing up in between cars walking down the street because I'm so nauseous. And so for me, it's something I never thought I'd be able to do. And for me, every time I get on that bike or go put on my running shoes or, you know, walk out my door, it is an amazing victory. And I want people to know that there's so much hope and that there is life after their diagnosis. And you can still be sexy and confident and a good person and healthy after really terrible, life-shattering news. If you work hard at it and you're determined, there is a great life to be lived.
Two HIV-positive men describing a life that would have been unthinkable 20 years ago. Joining me now is the director of HIV Prevention and Research for the City of San Francisco, Dr. Grant Colfax. In those stories, one of the men says, "I take my pills, I stay on top of my health, I ride my bike 20 to 30 miles." He says there is a great life to be lived.
Yes, I think that both the stories really show the commitment, passion, and advocacy that many people living with HIV have and continue to have as we move forward in this epidemic. And I think that in the last 10 years in particular, things have really changed for individuals living with HIV, for people affected by HIV. We have much better treatments now. Many people can expect to have a normal lifespan, even if they become HIV infected. And I also think the stories tell us the paradox of things getting better in many ways, which is a cause for celebration and hope. And at the same time, we continue to have hundreds of new infections, even in San Francisco alone, every year. So I think that the question is, how do we balance this hope, promise, and advocacy with the fact that we still have an infectious disease that is still infecting large numbers of particularly gay men in San Francisco and throughout California.
This is a disease that was once considered a plague, and now in many ways it's a prescription, at least for those who can get access to the right drugs. And so I wonder, how does HIV/AIDS becoming a chronic disease, an illness that needs to be managed, how does that change how public health officials approach it?
I think that's a really good question. I think that we are approaching the disease differently than we did 25 years ago. It is a chronic disease for many people. I think we still need to realize, however, that up to a quarter of Californians who are HIV infected are unaware of their HIV status. So we have tremendous work to do in that area. And we also need to make sure that people who are infected, who know they're infected, get proper care and treatment. But there's still tremendous issues in terms of access to testing, access to care that we still have to figure out. From a prevention standpoint, we need to balance the fact that it's a chronic disease with making people understand that this is still a lifelong disease, living with a chronic disease, that there's still many side effects of having the disease, that we now look at HIV as not only an infectious disease, but also an inflammatory condition that can result in a lot of what we call comorbid conditions, conditions such as increasing the aging process, increasing cardiovascular disease risk, increasing the risk of developing diabetes. All these factors are really attributable to the virus. So we know with medications and early treatment, we can decrease the chances that somebody develops those complications, but HIV is still no picnic.
Talk, if you can, about this idea of proactively prescribing these antiretroviral drugs.
Well, really, the data is increasingly convincing that earlier treatment is better. So we think in San Francisco, for instance, we recommend as a public health policy that everybody who is HIV infected be offered treatment, because we think that the earlier you start treatment, the less likely it is that you're going to develop complications due to having the virus out of control in your body. So the way to think about it is, the more virus you have in your body, not only the more likely is it that you will develop HIV-related complications, but we also know now that it's more likely that you will develop premature aging and end organ damage. And by that, I mean problems with your heart and your kidneys. So the data are clear that the earlier you start treatment, the more you suppress the virus, the more likely it is that you will not develop these complications over the long term. The other point is, in starting treatment earlier, we're also hoping that people feel healthier and are less likely to pass on the virus because they have a suppressed viral load.
Explain what you mean by virally suppressed. Some people might not understand
so
what that means.
So when we talk about viral load suppression, it means taking medications to reduce the level of virus to what are undetectable levels in your body. Now, it's important to emphasize the virus was always there. We haven't figured out how to eradicate the virus from the body, but it's suppressed to very low levels, so it's not replicating to the degree of that it would cause end organ damage or illness.
And as you mentioned, there are still a surprising percentage of people who are infected with HIV and don't know it.
Correct.
Increasing awareness of infection is one of President Obama's domestic goals. How do you do that? How do you get people who might not want to know to get tested, to stick around for the results, and then get treatment?
Right. Well, I think it was one of the things that the gentleman was saying earlier, that there are options available and treatment is available. So people should not be afraid of finding out that they have HIV. And we're really working in the health department, both at the local level, the state level, and nationally, to help our colleagues and help our community members locally to end the discrimination stigma that very much still goes with this disease in many communities. So at the health department, we think everybody should be tested for HIV and should become a normal part of healthcare for people to get an HIV test. If they're at risk for HIV, we recommend people get tested every 6 months. So gay men in San Francisco, if people use drugs, transgenders, we advise getting tested every 6 months so people know their HIV status.
And you see oftentimes these rapid testing mobiles going around
right.
the Castro.
So,
you also see them sometimes in Los Angeles. How has rapid testing changed the ability of public health officials to really identify people who may unknowingly have HIV?
Yeah, well, I think that it's just a much more efficient system now. So rapid testing, when we talk about rapid testing, it's not only bringing testing more into the community and emphasizing those community efforts, which, you know, really were developed in San Francisco as well as other jurisdictions, but also the test is more rapid now. So it used to be 10 years ago when you went for an HIV test, you'd have to get a blood draw. They would send it off. You'd have to wait 1 or 2 weeks to see whether your test was negative or positive. Now we have rapid HIV testing, which means even with a swab of oral fluid or a finger prick of blood, you can get your HIV test results within 20 minutes. So it's really revolutionized the testing efforts.
San Francisco's Department of Public Health has, of course, been a pioneer in HIV prevention and treatment even before AIDS had a name. And you have this idea of something called community viral loads. Mm-hmm. Explain what that is.
At an individual level, the viral load is really a measure of how many viral particles are in somebody's body. And at the individual level, at the patient level, what the goal is to reduce the viral load to undetectable levels. So we know that if people have an undetectable viral load, they do much better than people who have a detectable viral load, significantly so. And the medications that we've developed, especially over the last 10 years, really do a very good job of suppressing the viral load. So what we've done is taken that paradigm at the individual level and thought about, well, what about the viral load of a community? Because we know HIV circulates in certain communities. So now what we're looking at is, rather than just focusing on the individual level, how do we look at networks and communities of people and look at the viral load there as a measure of how we're doing in terms of our public health approach to HIV prevention and treatment? So if you look at a neighborhood, if you look at a certain group of people to see what the viral load is in that community, it helps us focus our public health efforts, use our resources better, reach out to the community, get community input on what needs to be done to best affect treatment and prevention in our city.
Dr. Grant Colfax is Director of HIV Prevention and Research with the San Francisco Department of Public Health.